it's high towards the Taylor. Walsh got there ahead of him though. On care plays it back in again. And no offside. And Taylor has scored. And that surely means it's the Premier League for Swindon Town now.
Welcome to the Washbag Podcast. I am your host, Christopher Paints. This is the podcast for Swindon Town FC. Today I am joined by Sam Morshead, Chief Sports Writer at the Swindon Advertiser.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by Ron Smith, editor of the Washbag.com. Keeping up your 100% record, Ron.
Yes.
As we all know, attendance equals achievement.
Yes, it does, yes. And a happy new season to all of our listeners.
Indeed, indeed. Yes, so as we've got Sam as a debutant, we'll start with you, Ron, the experienced head.
yes. <let's>, debatable.
Let's talk through some of the new arrivals at Swindon Town. Let's start with Troy Archibald Hendel, as he's the largest of the new arrivals. I think they probably had to have a crane to bring him in.
Yeah, he's a good signing from Exeter. A player I don't know too much about. Something which Alex sort of sent me some information on the other day was that there was a sort of an assessment done by another blogger looking at the sort of quality of players in League One from last season in terms of minutes played to actual achievement on the pitch, and actually surprisingly enough Troy actually came out top of all players in League One last season. I don't actually didn't have time to go into too much sort of detail, but I put a link on the website so everyone can have a look at it and sort of make your own sort of mind up. But on the face of it, he sort of provides good sort of in addition to the back line.
He's young as well, and it's easy to forget that he's only 23 years old. He does look to have an experienced head on his shoulders, doesn't he, Sam?
He certainly worked pretty hard during the time over in Italy, and I've been very impressed with what I've seen so far. He's got a terrific first touch for a centre-back, particularly at League One level. That's something that you don't see all together too often. He's got a decent range of passing, and he seems to be forming a very decent partnership with Alan McCormack there. And that can only bode well, because we know that defensive partnerships are pretty much the key. You want a striking partnership that scores goals and works well together, but if you've got two centre-backs that play regularly and don't concede many goals, you're going to have a cracking chance of being up there.
How surprised were you that Aidan Flint has found himself on the bench in most of the pre-season games?
I don't know. I mean, he's obviously a very talented footballer, just like Troy is. I think it's down to a matter of taste with the manager. When you come in and work as hard as someone like Troy has done, he's obviously going to set himself up well for running the team. But honestly, I think that Aidan Flint will always push himself up there to the fore. We saw last season, the first full season as a professional, he has a huge amount to give. Obviously the fans liked him straight away. He settled in very well. And I think that he could be a great asset as well for Swindon over the next season.
Indeed. And you touched there on having a great forward partnership, tipping up with goals, and two of the new arrivals have looked really impressive so far, Andy Williams and James Collins.
Yeah, I think people were sceptical a bit with Andy when he came in, because it was one season. Obviously it's a great season, he got 17 goals for Yeovil last year, but compared to all of his other goal scoring seasons, it seemed to be a one-off. What we've seen in pre-season so far is his ability not only to link up with James Collins, who I think is a proper born goal scorer and will get plenty of goals if he gets a chance to play, but Williams also has an uncanny knack of getting himself in a goal scoring position. He's been very unlucky the last couple of pre-season games that I've seen. He hit the bar twice at Souverini, hit the post twice against Palace, but I think he'll be in plenty of decent positions to score. And yeah, their partnership looks great, and when you've got Paul Benson as well, I think fans asking here and there, oh we need another striker, I think just give this lot a chance. We haven't even seen them competitively yet.
At Forest Green as well, it was his skillful turn that actually won the penalty too. So he was unlucky there. But his record at Yeovil is 22 goals in 72 games, which is not great. But I think he was generally employed as a winger there. So it'd be interesting to see how long he's played up top.
Similar. I mean, I think he just played up top for the majority of last season, and he actually, I mean, similar to sort of Alan Connell too, another player who previously played on the wing and then had a great season up front with Grimsby and obviously come to Swindon. I mean, similar one with Williams. And of all the players I've seen pre-season, albeit I've only been to two games, I mean, he's been the sort of standout performer for me in the two games I've been to for Supermarine and Palace the other night.
So his touches are just fantastic, aren't they? He almost looks like he's a more skillful Billy Bowden almost.
I think he's deceptively quick as well, which is something that which is probably why he was used by Terry Skiverton out wide. But you know, De Kane always said that he wanted to use him as a centre forward. And if you look at how he's used him over pre-season, he seems to be, I don't know for sure, but he seems to be De Canio's number one choice up front, the amount of minutes he's played compared to the others. So I think we'll see a lot of him. And it will be a do-or-die season for him, you know. You don't want to become the striker who looks like he could get goals and then turns out not get as many as you might hope. But if he carries on anything like he does in pre-season, and he did last year, then I think he'll be a great signer.
I mean, I don't know much about Jovan. I mean, I haven't seen him for a couple of years, but just in terms of, you know, the support that I think he's going to be getting at Swindon is going to be a better quality, particularly with the new wingers. We're probably to come on in a minute in terms of the quality of the balls in and the through balls. Now, you know, with the pace, which we've been lacking for so many years up front, you know, certainly looks like a good player. And with Collins as well, the strike forces.
Collins just looks so strong.
Does excite me.
He looks so strong as well, doesn't he? For a 21-year-old, it's really hard to see how he is so young with the upper body strength that he has and the ability to turn the defender. He looks like he's going to tip up with a great goal tally for the year.
I really think that he's a 20 goals a season striker. He got 16 last year. It's first proper season in professional football. I think he's a 20 goal a season striker quite easily at this level. Whether or not he starts, I don't know. I mean, in the last couple of pre-seasons, he's kind of seemed to favour Williams and Benson, but I'm sure when he does get a run in the team, for whatever reason, he's going to start banging them in. And when you start scoring regularly, you can't drop someone. So I think come Christmas time, you'll really see what impact he'll have made.
And I think the key with Collins is, I mean, that's a sign of the progress the club has made to be able to sort of attract him when there is other sort of potential sort of clubs, you know, looking to sign him. Really, I think that's the key. That's what gets me a bit excited for the season, and I think many other Swindon fans at the moment.
Well, I think that he'll score lots of goals because of the service that he'll be provided, not only on the right with Matt Ritchie, but also Gary Roberts on the left.
Yeah, absolutely, you're very right. And what Ron was saying about attracting the interest when other clubs want him. I mean, James Collins was a season ticket holder at Coventry when he was younger. Mm-hmm. Coventry were interested. I don't know how much the transfer embargo that they had at the time played on them not being able to sign him, but the fact that he was even entertaining Swindon's interest when Coventry, you know, his boyhood club, were interested in him, that says something about what the draw is of the club. And we don't know whether it's the situation the club are in financially, whether it's the De Canio factor, whatever it is, there's something that is attracting certain players to the club, and that's great.
The other thing as well is that Gary Roberts looks like a real goal threat too, from wide positions, in the same way that Richie has done in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say with Roberts the other night on the Palace game, what really impressed was the early crosses he was actually... I mean, the goal threat we didn't see too much, but it's the early crosses. I mean, McEvely did try to sort of overlap, and I don't think many times that actually Roberts actually utilised them at all. It's very much sort of get the ball in there early, which I think is going to benefit Collins, you know, whatever strike force we've got, really.
Indeed, and the service looked great at the Palace game. I was really impressed. We'll go on to that in greater detail as the podcast goes on. Let's move on to another impressive partnership, the two central midfielders, Adam Navarro and Tommy Miller, both veterans really of the game, 33 and 31 respectively, and both with slightly questionable injury records. How much do you think these two will feature in the coming season?
I think it will depend entirely on being home and away and what kind of tactics De Canio is going to want to use. It seems to me that if you want to be going out goals, you want to go and get pressure on the opposition early on, you're going to play Tommy Miller and Simon Ferry together. If you're going away from home and you want to be tight, shut up shop early on, Alan Navarro is fantastic sitting in front of the back four and organising both the midfield and the defence behind him. I think that Miller is going to be, out of the three of them, the one that plays the most minutes. I might be completely wrong, we'll come and see later in the season. But
The three being
with Ferry as well, with the three of them. I think one thing that Tommy Miller does have in his arsenal is goals. And from central midfield, I'll go back as far as when Kevin Orlock played just behind in 95-96. I'm trying to think of another... Brian Howard, maybe, a goal-scoring central midfielder. I know that Horlock played quite a lot of time out wide as well, but even to goal-scoring midfielder, Danny Ward, maybe. But there haven't been an awful lot in the last decade, and I think that if you look particularly at his earlier career when he was at Ipswich, he scored plenty coming late runs into the box Something that we haven't had for a few years.
No,
but whether he's still got that because of his age now and lack of pace, but I think he's just he is going to be a sort of great addition to the midfield. I mean, his goals have dried up over the years, but that's only going to be sort of natural. But he's still got the brain. He's still got the football brain. That's still just going to hopefully rub off on the other players, and hopefully he can sort of start to encourage Ferry to get a bit further forwards and to actually be a bit more clinical with his finishing.
Well, I can see, seeing Simon Ferry in shooting practice over in Italy, he definitely has it in him.
Yeah.
He had some cracking finishes over there. So I think it's more confidence with him having a go, having a pop at goal. He definitely likes to score. You saw that when he scored at Forest Green.
That's right.
Delighted.
Yeah, he was really happy with that, yeah.
I know that he would love to score more, but he's got it in him. But with the three of them together, there's the options that you have. They're all different players in their own right. Mm-hmm. They've all got very different abilities. And to have one of each of them, a holding man, a goal scorer, and a proper playmaker in it, which Ferry has turned into in the last year and a half, it's great. I think he's got loads of options.
Yeah. And in terms of Navarro, I think it speaks volumes that the Brighton fans wouldn't have begrudged giving him an additional 1 year contract there, and they did see him as he's quite a crucial player recovering from his injuries of two seasons ago. And I don't think necessarily he's going to future injuries going to hold him up any more than it could any other player, really. So
I think if anybody is going to stay fit, they're at the right club to do it with Paolo's backroom staff, aren't they? It's they do take great care of their players.
They certainly put them through a lot of hard work.
That's true. But the benefits of that, of course, are better conditioning and that sort of thing. To me, they both remind me of a slightly better composed Jonathan Smith, who of course left this summer to go back to York. Mm-hmm. Were there any departures that were of great sadness for you?
Well, the only one for me was Billy Bowden leaving. A couple of reasons. Well, he's one of the best talents to come out of our youth system for many years. Obviously, his family connection to the club, and he does have great potential. But we don't want to hold him back. And I certainly think Torquay is fantastic club for him to go to. Obviously proved it there with his time last year. And I do hope, and I've said this a couple of times, that we've got some sort of buyback deal on that agreement or a really good future sale, because I do see that he's going to have a good season either this year or next year at Torquay, and we'll be moving on to bigger and better things. And but that's what he needs. If I was Billy Bowden, I wouldn't want to just sit around in the reserves, because he can play first team football. I mean, he's the only player. I mean, the others that went, Connell, Smith, as far as I'm concerned, that they were never going to make the step. Well, that's a surprise, because obviously De Canio just made a big mistake in signing him. And I mean, Sam, do you know any more on the reasons why?
Cox has gone out,
personal issues, or was it sort of how he applied himself in training?
I'm not aware of any more than you are, I'm afraid.
He's gone on loan though, hasn't he? Is that because Paolo's not made his mind up yet, or is it because Oxford is such a tin pot club that they've got a sort of transfer budget of about £5 and most of that goes on crutches for Michael Dewberry?
I wouldn't want to comment on that too. Unfortunately, our paper is printed in Oxford. I've got to be careful what I say
very,
about that.
Very diplomatic.
I would say that.
What about you, Ron?
What about why Cox went, or
why it's only on loan?
Why it's on loan? Well, because he, unlike the other players, he was on a 2 year contract still remaining. I mean, the others 1 year, more expensive to actually get rid of, and secondly, someone wanted to actually take him on loan, perhaps with Connell. I mean, it was public knowledge that the club wanted to transfer list them for quite some time. No offers came in, so the only reason was just sort of cut your losses and get rid of them, really.
Callum Kennedy will come back this year. He's signed on at Scunthorpe. That was a surprise to me. I thought that maybe Chibokey might have gone rather than Kennedy, particularly with the local angle again. Mm-hmm. But we have seen from De Canio now that actually that sentimentality is completely absent.
No, it is. I mean, if you remember back to the start of last season, De Canio very much sort of experimented with youth, and he was very much sort of bringing up, we're going to try a lot of the youth team players this year, committing to Kennedy as much as he did at the start of the season with Bowden, bringing some of them, like Story played quite a lot. And he's obviously just realised that, no, that's not the route to go down. You can't be sentimental. You've just got to put out your best team, and whoever that might be.
What about backup keepers? Phil Smith has obviously gone out the door as well. Mm-hmm. We had Ian Turner on a trial very recently, but that hasn't worked out. Do you see Lee Bedwell as the backup now, or is there still activity to
Now he is, yeah. But the fact that they had Turner here on trial means that he's looking to, to have someone else. But he's got to be the right person. And I don't think he's desperate. I mean, barring injury and the odd suspension, I mean, Wes is going to play all the games. He's a top keeper. He, in my opinion, was the best keeper in the Division League 2 last year.
Oh,
and he's,
long
and he's got a great chance of being the best again in League 1. But, you know, talk about giving youth a chance, and why not have Lee, my opinion is, why not have Lee Bedwell there as that? If Fodringham ends up getting injured for 2 months, whatever, there's emergency loans that you can bring in as a keeper. And if it's just 20 minutes that Lee Bedwell has to come off the bench to play, you've got to let him do that. Otherwise, what was the point in giving him a contract in the first place? And it's the same with many youngsters. If you're going to involve them in the first team, then involve them. Don't just have them running around on the training ground or going up for a warm-up.
Yeah, well, particularly now because, you know, reserve team action is non-existent nowadays. So, you know, you've obviously got to sort of, you know, keep your squad numbers down, particularly keepers, because as you say, Sam, you know, no player's going to come in and displace Fodringham. I mean, it would be great if they did, because we'd have an even better keeper. You can't really complain at that, but that's not going to happen. But all that I can just see, is all that Takano needs to have is just, you know, one or two, you know, quick and easy. He can go and get them if he needs to. Emergency loan keepers, be in close contact with the other clubs, and just you know, if there's a suspension or injury to Fodringham, just use that route, because in the end, just adds to the payroll and sort of so forth.
Yeah. And it's great experience for Lee as well as a young goalkeeper, particularly now that the Football League have voted to go back up to 7 subs.
He's actually going to be involved.
He's going to travel, and as a young keeper, that's probably invaluable. Now, with all these ins and outs, there have been a lot of agents' fees to be paid. These were released, was it yesterday or Thursday?
Yeah, towards the end of the week.
So many agents have profited, not least from Swindon, who spent £448,506. Is this all down to Paolo Di Canio's erratic recruitment style?
Well, I guess the short of it is yes, because of the sheer number of transactions that have gone on. It looks like a very, very big sum, and it is a big sum for club in League 2. But you look at the number, is it 78 transactions? That, if you look and you go back and see how many players have gone in and out, well, we're looking, the guys in the office were looking at our kickoff supplement from last year and the team photo that went in it, and we saw, I think it was 10 people that were left in it from the one that will be done this year. And that sort of in and out, that revolving door that's been spinning at a ridiculous rate over the last year, is what's caused it. So you look at other clubs, yes, they've spent a little bit less here and there, but per transaction, they're spending more. This year, Di Canio has had fewer moves in the transfer market. There may be a few to come, there will be a few to come, but that means that the money that's going out there is, although it's a lot, it is because there's a lot of movement, and he's calmed down now, he's learning.
The most alarming was rather the 15 contract
terminations.
Which just kind of showed that he'd made a wrong decision. Obviously not all of those were his. He is learning, obviously. It's his first job, so perhaps we're being overly critical here. But to count to 15 contracts in the space of a year is high in my book.
Well, it is. I mean, and in the end, it's a complete change of strategy from the club as a whole, because Fitton had previously stated on numerous occasions how he was very much against the influence of agents in football, very much wanting to reduce the amount the club spent on agents to nil was his goal. I'm not sure exactly what the figures were in this report when it was published last year. I didn't have a chance to look at that, but it is quite a staggering sum considering the actual turnover of the club. You know, it's around about sort of, you know, 20% of the turnover it was spent on agents. It's a staggering sum, but you've got to remember a lot of them were free transfers, and they sometimes come with higher sort of agent sort of referral
you
fees as well.
As well, because Fitton refused to pay agents' fees, didn't he? And how many players did we miss out on because of
that's true. But what this proves is that paying agents' fees doesn't lead to success, because the players which came as a result of that were ultimately failures. When you're looking at your Cruces, and well, there's plenty to talk about really there, but essentially, it didn't guarantee success. But it's it's disappointing how much the money actually flows out of the club to agents. You know, you don't begrudge it necessarily going to the players, but it's the agents, the control that they have, particularly at the higher levels, when you're talking millions of pounds, when an agent wants £5 million just to be able to, like, to join Real Madrid when, like, Ronaldo went there, for instance. So
it looks a lot, but then when you look at it in relation to other clubs, for example, West Ham United, they paid £4.3 million, I think, on agents' fees. So the difference between Championship and League Two is really, that shows...
Well, let's not get it wrong, it is still a very large amount, and something that you do get concerned about, and West Ham are a club that has pushed into the Premier League, and that's something that I think Swindon Town can only dream of in the pretty long term. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, we can justify it. We can justify what the money is spent on, but some of those things I don't think are justifiable. Some of the contracts that people were brought in, played six games, Lanzano, Kamatsi, Esaias... You can keep going on if you want. Yeah, it just keeps on going on.
Yeah, but at least Lander had the one. He was the only one out of all the signs who had the 1 year contract. All of the others were given a nice sort of safety cushion. But perhaps they that's what they wanted. They wouldn't obviously come over to a new country without that. But in the end, we lost out.
So that concludes part one. Coming up in part two is the first of our regular features, talking to a Swindon Town legend of recent times. First up, I've got the aeroplane himself, number 9, Jan the Man Argafjortoft. You'll hear my chat with him after some music. We'll be back after that to talk about pre-season. Sam is going to give us some insight of the late Garda tour. And then we will also talk about the coming season and make predictions, which will be a stick with which to beat us come the end of the season.
Hello,
am I speaking to Jan?
Yes.
Jan, hi. Welcome to the Washbag podcast. It's Chris Panks here.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Thank you for agreeing to come on the podcast. I'm very honoured to be talking to you.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. I'm glad I can help.
The bit that we're all interested in, you made your move to Swindon Town. How did that
come about? Happened... Yeah, that was just quite interesting because when I was at Leeds United, my manager was a Scottish guy called David Hay. And with David Hay, I won a league in Norway. We had a great, great cooperation with each other. I'm very interested in international football, been all my life. And when David Hay came there talking about the Celtic time and the Chelsea time, and that interested me, and we got more or less friends. And When I was coming into my last year in Vienna, or my fourth year in Vienna, I thought it was time to move on. And this is the time before Bosman, so you were more or less tied. So I kind of made my goodbye without knowing where I was going.
Oh, okay.
And this is before YouTube. So what I did was I made a lot of video cassettes, and I sent it to all agents and all my friends in football, and one of them to David Hay. Ah. And then David Hay called me and said he was maybe going to do the assistant job at Swindon with John Gorman, and he said if I get that job, we will contact you. And thank God for me, he got it.
And of course, you arrived at a county ground that was in turmoil, really. Not so much turmoil. I mean, everybody was very happy at being in top flight for the first time. But Glenn Hoddle had left, of course, and left that manager's job vacant. His assistant then stepped up, and that's where you came in, because you were the record signing at the time. Was there any pressure surrounding that, or did you kind of thrive under that?
Well, no, there was not the pressure of the price, because that was not my kind of business. I always put pressure on myself. I mean, but in the first game we played Sheffield United away, being in the Premiership, I think this is the second Premiership year. There was a fantastic thrill about English football, as it is today, of course. But it was fantastic, and I had to go off at Sheffield United, and I got a kick I got a kick, but I kept it more or less quiet because I was so desperate to play in the Premiership.
Okay.
What you learn is that, of course, you have to be 100% fit. You have to adjust to a new kind of game, and I couldn't score goals. And if you see my track record, I've never had that problem. I've always scored goals.
Yes.
And they kind of got going more or less four first months of the season. And I've never been lack of confidence, but of course you start thinking when everybody else... I remember when they met a Swindon Town fans, did a fan sign, or what is it called?
Yeah.
And then there was two pages in the middle of there saying, this is what David Hay has done for Swindon. And then it was first page blank, second page blank, and then just a small print, and the second page, he said he brought Jan Fjørtoft to the club.
Ah.
And now it's a good story because I start scoring again. But I also thought it was, when I start scoring for Swindon, I was also very, very happy for David Hay because he had recommended me. And they
of
paid,
course.
I think, £500,000 for me. So that was also great for David.
Yes, and of course there was a difficult start, not just for you, but also for the team where they didn't win in the first 16 games, of course.
Yeah.
But you started scoring after Christmas and then didn't really stop, did you?
No, the funny thing is I didn't score the first half of the season. I think it was only Mathieu Letizia who scored more of me in the Premiership in the second part of the season. We were creating chances all the time. Seeing the game, seeing the games all over the season, I think we scored more goals than Arsenal, and they were fourth, and we were like last. But we had that way of playing, but it was like we lost 5-0 or 5-1, and then we signed another striker, and then we lost 5-0, and then we signed another striker.
Yeah.
So it was like a funny kind of way of it. But I think now, when I see the overview of the points, I can't remember how many points we took, but I think at the end we didn't do that bad. But of course we were relegated.
It's still a record, of course, the amount of goals that were conceded by Swindon in that
season. Yeah, and I remember the last game we played Leeds United at home, and we were that was at the stage of the season we were desperate to get a good last game, and then we managed to do exactly 100 points, 100 goals.
Yes.
And that was just bizarre. Brian Dean, who was later or is a very good friend of mine after we played together at Sheffield United,
yeah,
he played in that game, and he said they weren't even prepared for that game, and we're losing 5-0. That was not good.
I was a teary-eyed 8-year-old in that game, at the end of that game, I'm afraid.
Well, so was I. I was 26.
So then we went down. I'm interested to know, Jan, going from a team that had been promoted, and obviously there was a lot of joy in the dressing room in the previous season. How did the players react in the dressing room to losing week in, week out, and not picking up points? Was it a difficult place to be, or how does the mindset work?
I think no, it wasn't at all. John Gorman was a good manager in that term. He kept a good dressing room, no fighting. Maybe we're too nice. I remember we had a psychologist coming over and say how realistic we were about the level we had. And I thought everybody rated themselves too high because the table never lies. So that was an okay place to be. I think we were, I think when a team like Swindon, a team like Barnsley or whatever team go up in the Premiership, there is a sense of, we've made it. We are playing in fantastic stadiums. It's a good day out going to Anfield or Old Trafford. It is for the fans, but it tends to that the players will have a more or less same feeling. I was fortunate enough to at the same time play for Norway. So straight after we got relegated, I went to the World Cup.
That's right.
We were out. We were in a group of death. We were all 4 points, and the next day, we were going out of the World Cup. We came back to the hotel, and the first thing I did was to put my training gear on, and I had a good running session. The next day, I met my wife and my little kid, who was a little kid then, and I said to my wife, the start in the new season now in First Division England, that will be a major test for me, how far I will go as a football player, because you tend to, after you get relegated from the Premiership, you tend to slow down a bit, and I couldn't afford that, and I think a lot of players did, because we started the season well, and we were flying for a moment until things start going bad.
Well, you continued to score in the lower division, didn't you? There was a very good run in the League Cup as well, where Swindon got all the way to the semi-finals. And when it came to actually you joining Middlesbrough on the deadline day, you'd already scored 25 goals in all competitions. So that was a really good record, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a fantastic season for me, scoring-wise. And I think I then, being in the Premiership, getting self-confidence that you kind of understand the code of English football. I had in Nick Summerby a brilliant crosser of the ball, always being a man who is good in the 18-yard box. That's what I want to be. Critics can say that I didn't run enough, but I was running in the 18-yard box, and then we had 10 others who could run around the other boxes. And I just more or less was searching around the 18-yard box and be creating chances after chances. And we had some fantastic games, and even when we lost, remember we lost 4-3 to Portsmouth, and I scored a couple of goals. There was always that kind of games. And in the League Cup, we had a great run, and unfortunately, after being 1-0 up at Bolton, we went out in the semi-final, which was very disappointing.
Yes. It was a good season for you in the end, though, wasn't it? Middlesbrough went up as champions. Can you tell me a bit about...
No, but it was not that... I was lucky that I could go to Swindon. Now to Middlesbrough, there was still a very disappointment that Swindon didn't do better, because I went the easy ride, going from bottom to top and being a part of a revelation at Middlesbrough, and you felt fortunate for that, but there was still disappointment for the Swindon destiny.
Of course. And what were the major factors behind the move? There's been lots of conjecture regarding your relationship with Steve McMahon. How much was that a factor in leaving Swindon?
Well, I think I had that run in the Premiership. I had more or less I was more or less linked to clubs all the time, and I remember the fans being very unhappy with Swindon not getting more realistic or unrealistic, and then one day and one afternoon I was living in Shoreditch at Swindon, and I suddenly got a call from Brian Robson, and when Brian Robson calls you, you're kind of okay. And he said that the clubs had agreed a fee with Swindon Town, this is one of those things when a club's agree fee, you're more or less gone anyway.
Yeah.
So that was me off to Middlesbrough. With Steve McMahon, I think his record as a manager, he hasn't been a lot around. So he was a fantastic player, and as many other players, he didn't manage to take the next step into management. But I also learned a lot of things from Steve McMahon, being the man he is, and he made me sharp. I was angry at him. We had great fights in training, and I also kept scoring under him. So yeah.
So that was the motivation. He was sort of a bad cop that kept you scoring.
No, but I'm just saying that when managers come in, you have to learn from any manager. For me, it was always a factor that the type of player I was. I had to score goals.
Yes.
Because when I didn't score goals, people would say that I didn't work hard enough, and I didn't do this, and I didn't do that. And then obviously when Brian Robson calls you, then you will listen. And there was a lot of turmoil, and I kept out of it, which I'm glad I did. And that's why I played for many clubs, and I can still go back to any club that I play with and be welcome back and have a great relationship to them.
You had a great rapport with the Swindon fans. They all loved your celebration. And, of course, your scoring record is what speaks for itself as a striker. You know, you are, as you say, you're there to score goals. But one club you've even got a higher cult identity at is Eintracht Frankfurt. where you scored in the final game, in the final minute, I think, to keep them up in 1998.
Yeah, it was a funny thing, because I left Middlesbrough being a part of that revelation there. And then Ravanelli came, and we signed him for £8 million, and we played with one striker. It was time to move on.
Yeah.
Then suddenly Sheffield United, where I think I have my best goal record. Then I suddenly found myself in the Premiership again, playing for Barnsley. And all that things that football just make funny ways. And then I said to my wife, I left Sheffield United for Barnsley. I said, this is going to be the last move in my life. We're gonna stay in Sheffield because I can go off to Barnsley, train and play there. And then 5 months later, I was playing in Germany. And this is the last game of the season. I came in to kind of save them from being dropped. And there were like 100 ways that we could get relegated. And the 101st one occurred. And this is the 90th minute, and we have actually a guy sitting on the bench doing his maths. He was doing the table, we were leading 4-1, and we still get relegated because all the results in the world went against us. And we played Kaiserslautern, who, with a draw, were going to the Champions League. Oh. So then this guy finds out that if we score one more, we will have the same goal difference as another team, but we will win because we have more score goals. So then in the 91st or 92nd minute, I get the chance, and I'm running on my own at the goalkeeper, and then I do a quite risky, very risky trick, and we win 5-1, and we're having 60,000 in the stands, and they still speak about that in Germany. And every time when it's a relegation battle in Germany, I get called up from the German press. That was just amazing.
It's one of those moments that just sticks with people, isn't it? I'm reminded of Jimmy Glass, who went on loan from Swindon to Carlisle, a goalkeeper who scored in the last minute to keep them in the league.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I remember that. So, it's unbelievable. And the thing is that it is on YouTube, so everybody can have a look at it. And I do a kind of trick that I more or less invented myself, because when I was a kid, I found it a bit difficult when I was running all on my own in the center of a goalkeeper. I had to find how to do it. So I did it there, and I was fortunate enough to do it also in 1993 when I scored a 2-0 goal against Poland that took us to the World Cup. And that was two good moments in my football career.
There's so many highlights, aren't there? Is there any one that particularly stands out? I mean, you made your debut as a 19-year-old for the national team. You were captain on 15 occasions. Which stands out as the best?
Well, I think one of the major things, I have to go back to Swindon time, was that the goal against Tottenham. Because I scored against Ipswich in the FA Cup, I think. And then John Gorman put me in the team again. I more or less agreed alone because I wanted to save my World Cup place and going back to Norway and play football. And then Erik Torstvedt, my teammate on the national team that I shared room with, got injured after 15 or 60 minutes, and I went over to him and I said, you're a coward because I'm going to score now in the Premiership my first goal. And then Ian Walker came on, and I scored my first goal in 10 minutes later or something. So that is a moment that sticks out because it's a very important goal for me, of course, because that kind of made me into English football. It's also a great moment that has been my... I run a communication company here in Norway, and my logo, my trademark for the company is my airplane celebration. And that was invented in Swindon, of course. And I did a lot of stupid things when I scored. I did all kind of things. And in one game, I scored for Swindon halftime. There is this old lady, must be over 80 years of age. And when I went into the small tunnel at County Ground, she was like standing and showing me airplane that I have done in the first half, and I thought, well, when she loves it and it's got to stick with an 8-year-old, I have to keep on doing it. And it's now funny to come to England because I can meet people that do the airplane, and that's quite all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's an iconic. It will always be witty, won't it? Because I remember you played in a Legends game a couple of seasons back.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
I think you scored a hat trick in that game, if memory serves me. And each of the goals, you did your airplane celebration.
Yeah.
So that leads me on to my kind of final question, which is, what, now that you've hung your boots up, what inspires you to do your airplane celebration these days?
Yeah. First of all, it kind of gets me into a trademark. But I think I'm one of those. I work with a lot of companies. I run my communication company, part of a TV. I run a lot of other things. But it's one of them. I like to be a one who is doing this thing now, and he used to be a player. And I don't want to be he used to be a player and he's doing this now. I want to be the other way around. And I see a lot of players that kind of milk their background for all it's worth. I have found my position now, and that's why I can't remember I missed a goal. And I can only remember the good things. When I think of the clubs I played, I think of the sweet people I've met all over the place. And I travel a lot now because I'm also doing the foreign office at the Football FA here in Norway, and a lot of to do also with English. And it's always good to come back and kind of... That was a time, and it was like a time... I haven't been in Swindon for a long time, but I know when I come to Swindon, that is like, for me, going to another world. I was a part of this. Fantastic. So I plan to go over to Swindon this year. So we will see when I can do it. So
you'll have to let us know when you come. You'll have to let us know when you come over and come back for another chat, Jan. You still look out for all of your former teams? What do you make of Paolo Di Canio's revolution at the moment?
Well, I said when Paolo Di Canio came there, I knew Paolo because he played at Sheffield Wednesday. I was in Sheffield United. We were in town and we went for lunch once, and I met him at lunch, and he's a passionate guy, a positive, crazy man that I love in football, because you need a passion. And I think when Swindon was in the position they were before last season, you have to do things like that. You have to go for a risky appointment instead of this Johnny boring manager that travel around in England. So that was fantastic. Hopefully we will see a progress this year. I guess the most optimists will say go for another promotion. But seeing the teams that are in the League One now, there's so many great teams. But I'm optimistic, and hopefully we can be up there and upset some people.
Well, listen, Jan, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sparing the time.
No problem. Thank you.
Cheers. Welcome back. Welcome to part three. Hope you enjoyed that interview. That was the actual Jan Agerfjordtoft, who's found the time to speak to me. So this is who you're dealing with. We mean business this season, as do Swindon Town, as they showed in pre-season. The one blot on the copybook, of course, happened last week with the 1-0 defeat at home to, albeit Championship opposition, but Crystal Palace. What were your thoughts, Ron?
Well, it was a good performance. I mean, if it wasn't just for Wes's brash challenge which brought him down, albeit it was a fantastic through ball from Zaha to make that chance for Palace.
How good was he? He looks fantastic.
Really, really fantastic. And could we buy him? But it would be nice. Not going to happen. But no, apart from that, it could have just been a 0-0. It was a good game. It was a good performance. They sort of tailed off towards the end. I don't think we can read too much into it, really, for the season ahead. Because, last season, pre-season, we were fantastic. I mean, if you think of 2 years ago, Forest at the County Ground, how good did Dosevi look? Town looked fantastic. Are we going to get promoted this year? No.
Yes.
So don't read anything into pre-season. That, it's all, as Dekanis said, it's all about fitness and just getting the match practice, match experience, really. Important ones. Hartlepool, if we lose that, worry. No.
No, it's a difficult place to go, though, Hartlepool. Yeah. It's always a tough place to go. I thought I was really enthused by the performance. How quickly the new recruits have bedded into the way of playing is very impressive, I think, Sam.
Well, I think the major part of that is that they were all signed before pre-season. It's extraordinary. I haven't seen a Swindon Town pre-season like it, in terms of getting all seven in and having 2 months together, pretty much, before the season starts. And that's why you see at Palace, and you've seen all the games back in England, how well they've done as a unit and how well they can slot in. It's not completely there. I said they're probably about 80% of where they can get to at the moment. But that is because they were there so early, and that is a major change in the way that Di Canio has gone about his business. And a lot of it is, and he's admitted it himself, being more calm and being more collected when he's putting together his thoughts of what he wants to do. He knew on the final whistle at Bradford, the players, the seven players that he wanted to have in, and he went out and he got them in the space of, what was it, like six weeks.
They came with two tranches of three and then one on their own,
but in very short space of time. So, as you're saying, Sam, so different to last season was very sort of frenetic pre-season. You didn't know what was going to happen the next hour, let alone the next day. And it's so different this year. Di Canio prepared, but he obviously wasn't, he couldn't be in that position last year. He's taken advantage, you know, the situation's in, the sort of research hopefully he's done to actually bring some quality players. And yes, and they've all featured in a very sort of settled lineup throughout the pre-season period.
Some of the background was done last year with Jamie Kemeny, and John Bostock was a target earlier on. I don't know if you think that he still wants him to come in.
I think he does, yeah. I mean, he talks so often about him, so glowingly. You can't help but think, yes, he would like him to. He's still looking for that one player to add an extra different option down the middle, and if he's got the three with Ferry and Navarro and Miller, then Bostock is that man who changes it yet again. He adds a different dimension. So yeah, I think he would be keen if a deal could be reached. Yeah.
But also with the three up top as well, it could change that quite nicely if you had him playing off Benson or Williams, that could work well as well. Mm. So he's a versatile player, as is McEvely actually. And McEvely looked really good on Wednesday, I thought. Are there any worries there? I don't think Matt Ritchie had a particularly good game, but...
I don't think you can worry about Matt Ritchie. I think he's come to a season where he really needs to put his foot down, because he's obviously proved at League Two. Not only did he prove with Town, but he also proved it before when he was at Dagenham and stuff. He knows how to deal with League Two, and he pretty much was the best player. Well, he was voted the best player in League Two. In terms of League One, he had some good games for Town when he was there before, but we need to have a full season out of him, see whether he is able to cut it right at the top of it. I mean, I think he can. I think he's evidently got the talent to do it. But with him, once he gets into a flow, into a run of form, he's devastating. I don't think he's quite hit it yet in pre-season, but that doesn't mean to say that when it gets going on Tuesday that he won't.
Well, I mean, in the end, you don't really want him to hit the form in pre-season necessarily. You want him to hit form around Christmas time, actually get in important goals. But I think from Richie's point of view, there's a lot of expectations on him this season. Di Canio's probably going to be expecting quite a lot. He knows there's others in the squad which are going to be fighting for his position.
Yeah.
And Di Canio will go out there and bring in someone else, if even after one or two poor games, just to rectify a problem, because that's one thing he's not afraid of, actually making a change.
De Vita and Rooney have both come back with a real fire in their belly, I think, and their performances in pre-season, although limited to second-half substitutions, have been impressive.
Well, I think that the key is just the strength and depth in the squad. I mean, I can't comment too much on the individual performances, but it just speaks volume, the quality of the players. You know, some of the ones who actually had some good quality seasons in League Two are going to be on the bench. Just gives fantastic options.
Yeah, and also, of course, we did have Connell, who was our highest scorer in League Two, and, you know, gone straight out the door. So he's clearly understood that there is a step up in class in League One, and he obviously wants us to challenge towards the top end of the league rather than finish 19th or above. That whole mindset is absent with Paolo. It's not about staying in the league, it's about being Rottweilers and not Chihuahuas.
No, indeed. I mean, it's what you said earlier, he's got no sentimentality about any of his players. If they perform well last year on occasions, same as Richie, could be out. But I hope for Richie, say he does have a good season, because obviously we rejected some quite high bids from Bournemouth from him, and I don't want to lose out on some money.
Exactly, yeah. I think he'll retain his value, even if he doesn't have a slow start to this season. The Italian tour, so you went this time,
yes.
Sam. You managed to escape the karaoke.
I did, thankfully, yeah. I don't think anyone would have wanted to hear me do any of that.
What was the atmosphere like out there? Was it... You know, the players came in very early, and has that sort of helped with a spirit of togetherness?
Well, they get on very well. I can tell you they were all just very tired most of the time out there. So whilst they all got on very well, it was generally a case of, right, let's get through this next one, let's keep pushing. the professionalism out there was just extraordinary. I mean, you talk so often about role models and footballers and making sure you actually knuckle down and earn your money, because they earned quite a lot of money. And they really did, and it was impossible not to be impressed by the way that they applied themselves out there. And it's nice to see, to be honest, from a fan's point of view as well as from a journalist's point of view. It was a good experience to see how hard they do put, how hard they do work just to get themselves in shape.
And that was kind of the superior levels of fitness were really apparent in the pre-season games against non-league clubs, and that would have been there anyway. But obviously that's supplemented with the work in Italy and in that heat as well. I mean, how hot was it out there?
It was hot. It was 30, 32, 33 degrees, going to 35 sometimes. But when you were running and some of the stuff they were doing, you know, doing three lots of 300 metres, three lots of 600 metres, three lots of 300 metres with a minute's break in between each run. And the day after the Bayern game, they come back, they do 16 lots of 100-metre sprints, and they had to go sub-17 seconds on every single sprint. That's the morning after they've just played against Bayern Munich seconds at altitude. So, you know, they're pushed hard, and they really, really do have to dig deep, but whilst they may be grumbling inside, their professionalism shone outside.
It's no wonder Liam Clark got the helmet.
Yes. No, indeed, I mean, that was one of the problems last year. You didn't actually... He saw the videos, they looked good. Didn't they actually check into much about the personality and the mentality, really, and the professionalism? So, you know, with the players he's actually got this year, you know, has been proven, as you're saying, on the pre-season tour, you know, they've all proven to him, well, hopefully. I mean, is there anyone that you can say who didn't actually look?
No, they were all putting
fantastic.
As much in as you possibly could do.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's what every Swindon supporter wants to hear, that all the players and what...
That's all you can want, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're given your best,
yes.
You know, we've watched in the past many different teams, down the years at the County Ground, and you can always pick out a player who you've looked at who's ambling around after 50 minutes up front, not chasing the ball side to side, and you think, why aren't you doing it? You know, you're paid decent money just so you can go and do this once a week, and these guys do it, and, you know, what more can you want than to put in 100%?
Yeah.
The quality, obviously, is up there as well, but when you have effort and quality, that generally breeds success, and that's happy fan time.
It is a winning formula, isn't it? Talent and hard work. It's what we've seen in the Olympics as well, of course, the last couple of weeks. Not in the football. So let's talk a little bit about the coming year. We're in a bright new future in a higher division. What do you think are the biggest threats this year? Who do you see as our biggest challenges?
Well, the biggest challenge, biggest threat is ourselves, really, and the expectation from within, from the fans. You know, we had a storming season in the end in League Two, and many think that will actually, you know, continue in League One. You mean, you know, as Swindon fans, we know the difference between the two divisions, and there is a big step up between them. And the quality of some of the teams that are coming down, you know, fallen giants, so to speak, or, you know, the bigger teams. It's going to be a difficult season. As far as I'm concerned, if you want a prediction now, or are you going to come on to that?
You can consider it for a couple
of
days.
Okay, I can consider it, but yeah.
We'll come back to it. And how about you, Sam? I mean, Preston North End spending a lot of money, Portsmouth are coming down, but obviously they've got their own problems as well, and they'll be lucky to survive as a club, really.
I think Portsmouth will go straight through the division, but I don't really want to say too much about that.
Yeah.
Guy in the local media community is a Portsmouth fan. I don't want to say too much about that. I think that MK Dons will finally go up this year after their many, many tries. I think Notts County will be right up there with the way that they've spent. I think Preston, I think Doncaster will be right up there as well. The thing about this League One compared to League Ones for the last 5 to 10 years is that there's not an awful lot to separate about 22 teams there.
That's right. The last couple of seasons, there's been one standout, real high quality team at the top. There was Southampton, Norwich, you know,
Charlton
last year as well, who ran away with it. And I don't think that there is going to be team that does that.
Think there'll be a runaway team that goes at the top either. I think Leeds will change hands. I think it will be one of the most exciting League One seasons in terms of that in recent years. In terms of overall quality, I'm not sure it's near. Well, it has been, well, especially when we went to the playoff final 3 years ago. You know, the teams that we were playing then, you had the Huddersfield, Southampton, Norwich, Leeds. You know, there's filling up the top of that division. Had Charlton, though. It was a really high-quality division there. You look at it, the players there, they're all of a decent quality, but they're spread out more in the clubs this year. So I think that all you've got to do is have 2 months of hot form, yeah, and you're going to set yourself right up for a real challenge.
And win about, and it's also about winning games from those around you as well, mm-hmm, and taking those points off them. I mean, if we go back to Huddersfield as a model, they were real high quality and they really struggled to get out of the league, out of the division, along with Leeds as well. Leeds had a real tough time.
Yeah, just because you've got the players and you've got the fans' expectations doesn't mean you're going to succeed. And like Ron said, that's the danger of us this season. I think a lot of people are saying, yes, we'll go up straight away. I know so many people who put bets on Town to go up automatically. And it's like, okay, it's great to have that positivity and you always want to keep that. But think about it. If you're following the team and in the middle of November, we're 12th and we're 5 points off the playoffs, are you then going to cut and run? Are you going to give up because it's not been as good a season as you hoped? I hope not, because being 12, 5 points off the playoffs is still all to play for. And I think that as long as Town can survive the inevitable dip in form at some point, because we didn't really have one apart from the very start of last year, and if everyone at the club can deal with that properly, then we should be in a decent position to challenge.
Well, the key this season is going to be how we cope with what we did good last year. You look at Fodringham, you know, whether he really recovers from making a mistake, you know, the goals conceded at home, how we bounce back from that, because we haven't had to do that necessarily for quite some time. We are going to be, you know, more tested, particularly in defence, and we've got a very good defence in terms of ball at feet, passing, distribution, but, you know, against some of the least sort of quicker forwards, whether they
stronger
cope.
Forwards as stronger, well. Yeah, exactly. I mean, You go back, and there's a moratorium on mentioning this, but back at Wembley, the game against Chesterfield, the back four really struggled, and that was, of course, because Aidan Flint was absent and Rissa was present.
Yeah.
So I think that there are... It's great being positive, and I really like the fact that on all the forums and things, people are really behind this team, and that's great, because normally it doesn't happen as a Town fan. But I wrote a piece for the site, Rob, about the last 20 years of promotions.
Yeah.
And I said that actually it's not that realistic that we're going to get back-to-back promotions, because it's only happened 10 times in the last 20 years. Mm. And somebody tweeted me a picture of their betting slip, which said £200 to win the league. So that was me kind of talked down. Sorry, I can't remember your name, to give you the name check. So in terms of predictions, I'll go first, then make a rod for my own back. I'll be delighted with a top half finish.
Similar to me, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, a top 10 finish would be absolutely fine. We've got a 3-year target for challenging for the championship. I mean, probably financially the club needs to get there sooner rather than later, but I don't think, even if we went there, we need the stadium to back it up. Top 10, but yeah, flirting around playoffs would be nice.
I agree with you, the financial side. And speaking to the chairman the other day, he was saying to me, as it went in the supplement yesterday, he was saying that within 3 years he feels that the leagues will split into this Premier 1 and Premier 2, not by name but by nature, and the financial drawbridge effectively will have been lifted, and that you will need a championship budget to get from League 1 into the championship. So I think from his point of view it is inside 2 years, or it's going to take a long, long time and a lot of money to do it. So I think that the squad they have right now, and I think there'll be a couple more additions to it, I think is a top 10 squad as it stands. I think they can push for that final playoff place. If they were any higher than sixth, I would be absolutely thrilled and delighted. My prediction, it went out in the paper anyway yesterday, is sixth place.
We will see.
Yeah. Always optimistic. You've got to be in my line of work.
Excellent.
Well, who actually goes into the season predicts they're going to get relegated, isn't it, really? I mean, it's the only time in the season where everyone's sort of, you're completely optimistic, but there's so much uncertainty. So, I mean, you know, unless you're a Portsmouth fan, you know, you're probably dreading the worst, but everyone else in the division is thinking, oh, at least the playoff.
Yeah.
And as you say, in terms of the league being very sort of, the quality being very widespread, then a lot of teams are going to think that they've got in for a chance of promotion.
It's an interesting thing you were broaching there with Jeremy Rowe's prediction of Premier 1, Premier 2, at least, if not in name, by nature. I think that there's a pattern emerging here where, actually, I think the old institutions of clubs, as they were, clubs that have had their centenaries, you know, you look at what's happened to Rangers, you look at what's happening to Portsmouth. Are we going to start, and also with clubs that also have higher investment as well, and are now changing their badges and changing their home colours, Do you think that we're starting to see the end of football as we sort of know it, and a move towards franchises and different owners and a shorter lifespan of football clubs?
I don't think that football itself would allow a franchise system to come into operation in this country. It just doesn't work. What we've got at the moment is commercial rebranding. Cardiff is what you're talking about, isn't it? The change of the colours. It was a bit of a shock to the system, and it might happen to other clubs, but you're trying to make a place more marketable so you can succeed and get up through the divisions. I guess it depends what you want and how much you want to sell yourself as success and what success means on different levels to different people. I think seeing what is happening generally is a change of football as we knew it, but it's not a great shift. It's not a seismic shift. It's just a very small movement forwards, like evolution of a game, which is going to happen with anything. I mean,
how many more Portsmouths are we going to see, though, that pour so much money into
unsustainable success, isn't it?
I don't
it?
Know how many seasons they had in the Premier League, but they, you know, they had a season in Europe as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it was a good sort of six or 7 years that they had up there. Yeah.
Is that worth the death of your club? I mean, 10 years of good times?
Well, I mean, all you can do is ask a Pompey fan whether they'd give back their 2008 FA Cup trophy just to be solvent. That's the question.
I think they'll probably say, particularly the chap John Anthony Portsmouth Football Club.
Yes.
The guy has changed his name.
Pompey, yeah.
Anyway, let's not get too heavy. That's quite enough, I think. I think we could talk about Swindon Town matters all day long. Just a reminder that this is a new regular podcast. We will be producing a podcast once every 2 weeks-ish. We will keep you up to date as and when we record and when we release. Let's get some plugs in. Of course, there was the kickoff supplement in the advert yesterday.
There was.
It's the first. How regular is that going to be?
Well, the actual supplement is just purely the pre-season supplement, but we'll be doing the same as we were doing last year. So for weekend games, we'll be producing an 8-page result supplement pull out every Monday. For midweek, we'll have the standard inside spread for the match report there. But also, we'll be looking to do more online content. I'm looking to hopefully set up a few fans forums, and we might even rival you by setting up our own podcast.
Oh no!
Oh dear!
Okay,
started off so well. What's on the site this week, Ron? I saw that there's the third part of Fraser Digby's in-depth interview.
Yeah, we published that yesterday, as you're listening to this on a Sunday. The third part of the Digby interview. We've also got the future parts of that coming up. The part four is very, very revealing, where he talks about sort of his time at Swindon under Steve McMahon, which was a very difficult time for Macca and many others. For Digby and many other players.
We heard a little bit of that in the Yarra Fjortoft interview as well.
Yes. So. Yeah, obviously that's one of the points. But also we've got some further predictions on the season ahead this week. We've also got our safe standing questionnaire, which if you're listening to this and you haven't yet had the opportunity to give us your answers to the various questions, please do. You can just find it on the site homepage, and look forward to hearing your views. Because I've will be meeting up with the club in a couple of weeks to talk about the results of that, and hopefully sort of bring the safe standing roadshow down to the club, so that the board can have a look at it, and also the fans can have a look at the rail seats.
We'd also like to hear your views on the podcast. What you would like to hear, who we can get in the interview booths that you'd like to hear from. You can email us.
We can email podcast@thewashbag.com.
You're way ahead of me, Ron. Way ahead of me. Final plug. There's a charity match happening on Sunday, the 26th of August. This, coincidentally, is when we will release our next podcast, so tune in. It's for a great cause. It's being organised by some people at the club in the media team. It's at Fairford Town FC. Kick-off 2 p.m. Doors are open from 12. There'll be lots of fun things for kiddies to do before they go back to school. Confirmed for the Swindon Town team are Paul Bowden, Fraser Digby, Jamie Pittman, and I think there are others to be confirmed. So get yourself down there. It's for a great cause. It's for the British Heart Foundation. It's a pay what you want type entry system. So there are no excuses. Get yourself down to Fairford on Sunday, the 26th of August. That concludes the first of our regular podcasts for the season. Tune in on the 26th for the next one. Goodbye from all of us here.